Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps to build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show. Hi, Martha. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Martha Waters. I am a children's librarian in Maine by day, and I write Regency romantic comedies by night. And my fourth book is about to come out. It's called It's Wounded to Spar.
So we got to talk about librarians are at war. Like, we're at war. I am actually, yeah. So, you know, I live in a state where pretty much everything's getting banned. I live in Florida. So. Mm-hmm.
That's like where I'm from originally, actually. And I'm
it's ground zero. I was just
frightening time right now.
Frightening time. So, but librarians are pretty badass. Like, they're pretty much like, no, not take any holds bar. And so talk to us about like what it's like, especially with children's, because that's the ground zero of like what right. they're getting. It's like children's cannot learn pornography.
Blah, blah, yeah, blah. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I'm really fortunate that I live in Maine, which is it's like a blue state, but I mean, it's really a purple state, I would say, but I live in a pretty progressive part of Maine, right on the coast, and the town that I work in is a pretty like progressive town, all things considered. And so it's one of those things where like there definitely have been book challenges and stuff in other parts of the state. And they talk about it a lot on the librarian listservs for librarians in Maine and stuff. But we haven't encountered it yet, knock on wood, at my library, but it's something that's like always in the back of your mind. Like when I do the YA ordering for my library. And so when I'm ordering the YA books, like it's not making me not order things, but it is a thing that you're kind of like in the back of your mind when you're selecting books. It's like, oh my gosh, what would I do if someone challenged this for whatever reason? And so it's definitely made me really appreciate all the things that I already appreciated, like when I was doing book selecting, like really relying on professional reviews so that if we did get a book challenge, I could be like, look, we are just using the criteria that we've always used to select books and like looking at like what the trade reviews are saying about it and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's a bad time to be a librarian. Cause it's just, I hate that I have to think about it so much more now than I used to. And I realize I'm in like a very privileged position in that I don't feel like I'm at a library or in a state where it really feels like all out war on librarians. And I don't anticipate that being a thing happening in Maine to like too bad of a degree, but it's, I don't know. It's just really frightening. And I just feel so horrible for all these librarians and other states who are really under fire for this. I mean, it's like, it can really ruin your life. Like some of the things that are happening are really horrifying.
Not only that, they're underpaid. So it's not like a position where you're paying like $6,000, like seven figure, like, you know, you're underpaid and you're actually expected to educate and do emotional labor.
And I know my boss and I've been talking about this because we're just like, we don't get paid enough to have to worry about like either getting fired or getting like sued or something for books that we're buying for the library. Like, this is not a highly paid profession. And I think about it a lot in terms of school librarians, which that's been a tough job for years because of all the like budget cuts and a lot of school librarians don't have assistants or anything. So they're essentially doing a job that really should be like three people's jobs. Mm-hmm. One person is doing it in a lot of places. And so to have this added stress on top of that for just truly pitiful pay is just like, I mean, anyone who is getting burned out and leaving the profession, like I hope they stay because we need good librarians, but I don't blame anyone who is really kind of reassessing because it is not a great time to be a librarian.
It's not a great time, but a fun thing as a user, as a multiple librarian, like library user, because I do buy a bunch of non-resident cards and I just like support different libraries that way. One of my favorite things is that librarians curate lists of like, you know, books for you to select. So what's the process of curating those lists? Because I feel like you have done that probably for other libraries and stuff like that. Just, you know, here's some lists, so, you know.
Yeah, at my last library, we don't do as many of like the digital book list at my current library, but the last library I worked at, which was in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, we had a lot of book lists, and it really was like a pretty sizable undertaking just to both constantly be creating new lists and also keeping the old ones updated, because we kind of had like a, we had like a spreadsheet where we kept track of all of them and when they were originally created and when they were last updated, because we don't want all the books on a list to be like books that were published 10 years ago or something, because the kids are like they're already read those or they're just not interested. So it's a real like you want to have current like new releases on a list as well as maybe some like older titles. You want to have maybe some popular stuff, but also part of the goal is to draw attention to books maybe people aren't aware of as much. You want to ensure that you're kind of having a balancing all different viewpoints in terms of representation, like in terms of racial and ethnic diversity, in terms of LGBTQ perspectives, like all those, you're trying to do all of that while also still having a list on oftentimes a very specific theme. So it's like more work than it seems like it would be. I really like making book lists. It's like one of the parts of the job that I've enjoyed the most. But I don't know, especially if I'm deciding to do one on like a particularly like niche theme, it can be really tricky to actually come up with a list that feels sort of diverse and like well curated. So I don't know, it's a challenge that I always have really enjoyed.
It sounds like a fun challenge. It's the one reason I actually love creating listicles, like just curating lists. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you like this, try all these different things. That's, you know, one of the things. And I'm like, I admire librarians who do this because I'm like, you're actually giving me, I love scrolling through Libby. Like that's like my favorite thing is just scroll through Libby and be like, what else can is out there? So it's like it makes your life easier to scroll through the front page of Libby in digital, at least in the digital world, and to see like all these like listicles of like, you know, audiobooks you're thinking about it for beach, for winter time, seasonal, like current events, like important things. What are people reading? You know?
Well, it's nice to hear from a user perspective that like these lists are actually useful though.
They are. So all right. So let's switch gears into writing Regency rom-coms. you've been our guest before and we talked about like the process of writing and the Regency and rom-coms, but you know, let's talk about like, you know, what have you discovered after writing 4 books in this world? You know, what are new discoveries or new things that you're like, oh, like, you know, like I wish I knew this like 4 books ago?
I like to think that I'm learning with each book. It doesn't actually feel like it gets any easier with each book, but I think that's just because I like know more and I'm holding myself to a higher standard with each book. I feel like it's been my newest book is the one I probably had the best outline for, which I really hate to admit that everyone who loves writing a really detailed outline is correct. And it actually does make it easier, but that they are in fact correct. And it does make it easier. And so, yeah, I felt like this was this one's probably the smoothest writing process for me of all of them, because I kind of knew what was going to happen on a chapter by chapter basis. But also I just, that worked for this one. The one I'm currently writing, which is going to be the 5th and final book in the series, I had a very bad outline for, and I could not outline it well. So clearly it just varies from book to book. I think that's also part of something you learn as you write more, is just that each book is going to be different and maybe your process is going to change a little bit for each book. This one was also an interesting experience because it's a little bit of it's a Regency rom-com, but it's also a little bit of a spoof of Gothic novels. And so there was a bit of an inspiration from Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen, which is kind of the most famous spoof of Gothic novels. And I wanted to be really careful to not seem like I was copying that book. So I actually waited. I hadn't read it since I was a teenager, and I really wanted, the whole time I was reading it, I really wanted to read it. And I forced myself. I usually just like, I just read whatever I want when I'm drafting. It doesn't seem to like impact my drafting process at all. But with this one, I did not allow myself to do a Northanger Abbey reread until I had actually written a draft of this book, because I was worried I was going to accidentally like copy something from Northanger Abbey.
Oh my gosh. I love this. All right. So how do you balance your time? Because writing can be a full-time job, along with you already have a full-time job and you have a life and you've been able to travel, and I learned about Scott's cheap flight thanks to you, so
I'm so glad spreading the gospel of Scott's cheap flight.
So how do you balance it all?
Okay, so I always joke, I feel like writing can kind of expand to take up as much time as you allow it to take up. So I actually don't work full time anymore. I'm part time at the library up here. Okay. I made that switch when I moved to Maine from North Carolina. And like, on the one hand, I do have more time to write now. And that definitely is like really helpful. On the other hand, I feel like it hasn't given me as much more time as I thought it would, because I think I just end up spending more time writing. And I think there's less, like I used to, when I worked full time, I was pretty disciplined about, you know, getting up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning to write before going to work. Cause it's like, well, if I have to be at work at 8 and I'm going to work from 8 to 6, then like, yeah. I don't really have a choice. I got to write in the morning because I don't do very well writing at night. So that's very motivating to me to get it done. Whereas I try to write, I've been mainly writing 7 days a week the past 6 months or so, but I don't think I'm as good at getting a lot done on my work days as I used to be. Cause I'll get up at 6 and try to write a little bit before work, but I'm always like, well, if I don't get it done, it's not the end of the world because I have more days off now. I definitely, yeah, I did have to start on the, I work a 4-day week. So I have 3 days to write, like all day. And on those days I had to start like building structure into my day essentially. So I started going ice skating randomly at lunchtime and stuff, just so it's like, well, if you already paid for your ticket for the public skate session at 11:45. So you have to like write a chapter or revise a chapter or whatever before 11:45 this morning. And I actually found that really helpful because otherwise I was just like, I have all day, and I just lie around on my couch with my laptop, like writing, but like at a snail's pace. So a little structure is helpful.
I like the structure. Okay, and we got to talk about Scott's two flights because I just mentioned in passing. Tell us what this is all about.
Okay. So they actually just changed the name of it recently. So the company is now called Going, I think, but if you Google Scott's Cheap Flights, you'll still find them. And basically it's like a free email newsletter that a friend of a friend clued me into like before the pandemic, like 4 or 5 years ago. And they just email, you can like set what airport you want like notifications for. And they'll just email you whenever there are good flight deals from that airport. And usually it's like, they're pretty like the deals don't last very long. So it's definitely a bit of like a pressure situation, but like I impulse bought tickets to Portugal with a few friends the year before the pandemic. Like we paid like $400 round trip for our tickets. And it was a complete, like I was at work and I like the email came in from Scott's Cheap Flights and I was like, huh. And I was like trotted out to my boss and I was like, can I take this random week off like a few months hence? And she was like, do you need an answer right now? And I was like, I literally do, because I don't know how long this like airfare sale is going to last. And she was like, okay. And so I went back, I trotted back to my desk and then just bought a plane ticket to Portugal and convinced friends to come with me. So I don't know. I always talk about how with friends, I like to travel a lot. And I think that once you get there, traveling in Europe is so much cheaper than traveling in the US. Like whenever I go anywhere in America, I am astonished at how expensive literally everything is. So if you can get one of these Scott's Cheap Flights deals and like get across the Atlantic on a pretty cheap flight, then once you get there, you can stay at like pretty nice places for not very much money. So yeah. I'm a big fan because I love going on vacation, but I'm also deeply frugal. So
yeah, it's a good combination. I actually had in 2014, 2015, I worked with someone who basically taught me about flight deal, which is similar idea. And I got like, and with him, I ended up getting like a $64 round trip ticket to San Francisco, did a solo trip for a weekend. It was great for New York. And then I did find a $125 round trip ticket from New York to Oslo. And like you said, I was not going to go to Oslo because Oslo is expensive, but I just got a $10, like I think it's like a $20 ticket to Berlin and a $30 to Budapest. And yep. Like I made this like whole trip because it's like so cheap to fly in like in Europe. Like, mm-hmm. like you can just take like, you just find a place and like to stay. It's like so cheap.
Yeah. Because if you just get anywhere in Europe and you can either take the train or you can get like a Ryanair deal for I think I flew from London to Oslo once for like $15 or something. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And then the cost of living is lower there. So once you're there, like what you're used to paying for a hotel or for food or anything in America, even with it's like extra favorable now because the exchange rate has gotten better for Americans, mm-hmm. but even before it dropped so much, just stuff isn't as expensive there. So
what part of Portugal did you go to?
We went to Lisbon and I really want to go back and go to Porto because I've heard really good things about it. Cause I think Portugal is like an unsung hero of like European travel. I was like, it's beautiful. It's very nice weather. Like we went in February when it's like horrible weather on the East Coast and it was beautiful. The people are super friendly and English was like really widely spoken, like more so than I was expecting considering it's Southern Europe. We went with a kid, my friend brought her toddler with us and they were so much more like child friendly than traveling in the US is, where everyone kind of acts like it's an inconvenience that you dare bring your offspring with you, versus like people kept letting us skip the front of lines and stuff because we had like a little 2-year-old with us. So yeah, big fan. I love Portugal. I think it'd be a great place to go for like a honeymoon or something also. Mm-hmm. Like, cause it's just, I just think it's so beautiful and so romantic. Yeah. I really want to go back.
Yeah. I went to Portugal. I think that was like the next trip that I took, and I spent about a week in Lisbon, went to Berlin, went to Fatima, went to the beach, because there's like, you can just take the train to get to the beach.
Yeah.
It was great. Like, I loved it. I actually, Portugal, eventually when I leave my remote work, I want to like live in Europe, and I'm like, well, there's expat. Portugal has really good expat like visa. The other option is to Spain, just open up the visa. And I'm like, well, I speak Spanish first, but I'm practicing with Duolingo. It's Portuguese to be like, well, maybe I can like live for a year, you know, it's, as an expat. Live a life.
It's so lovely. No, I really, there was just actually an article in the New York Times like a week ago about all the Americans who are moving to Europe now because of the rise of remote work, and it's so much cheaper there for us. So obviously that comes with like its own issues because it's driving up housing prices for Europeans, but a lot of them are going to Portugal because they're like, wow, like this is great. And I'm like, yes, it is great. But also like New York Times, don't write about this. Don't like let everyone in on the secret.
Don't let everyone in. Yeah, I understand. So, all right, let's talk about the Soon and the Spar. Tell us the elevator pitch.
Okay, so Tisun and Tisbar is, yeah, a Regency rom-com about a Viscount who has had this like lifelong ambition to buy back his ancestral home that his uncle now owns, and his uncle finally agrees to sell it to him if he will marry his ward, who he needs to get married off. And so they get married, they go off to their little atmospheric Cornish estate, and this hero realizes that his house is haunted, except actually his house is not haunted. His wife just wants to get rid of him since she was forced to marry him, and so she is staging a haunting to get rid of her husband, which, you know, like relatable. She just wants some peace and quiet. Who among us has not haunted an enormous house to get rid of a man?
So I love the fact you marry them off. Like, pretty much our books are getting married like very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, now that are like, we're not even going to do the marriage more trying to figure out like you're like this. Like, I was like, we're going to get you together, you know?
Yeah, well, like with regencies, it's kind of like, it's easier sometimes to get them married at the beginning if you need them to be able to spend a lot of time together without having to figure out how to like always have a chaperone nearby or something because of like the rules of society. So in this one, I was like, listen, I need them to both be in this house so that she can haunt it to try to scare him. So they're going to have to get married right at first, but clearly it is not a love match. So they're not going to be happy newlyweds immediately, at least.
I love this. Awesome. So let's have some book recommendations. Books to recommend our listeners to pick up.
Yeah, I have three that I think are my three favorite romances of 2023 that have come out so far. And I think I have one from like each month of 2023 so far, because I'm just so well prepared, obviously, and that's not a coincidence at all. So first is Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies by Heather Fawcett, which is a historical fantasy romance. Basically, it's like, okay, so it's set about 100 years ago, like maybe Edwardian era, and it's about a female academic from either Oxford or Cambridge, one, I can't remember which, and she goes to this like fictional Scandinavian country to study the like native fairies, fae, that are there. Mm-hmm. And she's very sort of like grumpy and socially awkward and everything, and she unfortunately is accompanied by her sort of himbo of an academic rival. And so this book is deeply charming. It's written like diary style, which I feel like can be hard to pull off sometimes, but it really works in this instance. And yeah, like the fantasy, the whole like world building of like with the fantasy with all the like the fae and everything is really cool. So I think fantasy readers will like it, but also the romantic subplot is absolutely delightful. And it's the first, and I believe a planned trilogy. So I'm very excited to read the sequel to that one. It's just, it's delightful. So yeah, that came out in January. And then Something Wild and Wonderful by Anita Kelly just came out, I think, in March. And that one is a queer contemporary romance set on the Pacific Crest Trail about two men who are on the trail for kind of like different reasons, basically. And they meet up, they're hiking solo, and they meet up and end up hiking together and falling in love. And I'm not much of a like outdoorsy person. But I finished this thing like, wow, I wonder if I could hike part of like the PCT or maybe just like the Appalachian Trail since I live on the East Coast. And I was, that changed my senses. And I was like, Martha, you absolutely like, I don't to carry a tent on my back. I like doing like 2-hour hikes, but I definitely had this like feel like a few days after finishing it, I was like, perhaps I too could like take extended leave from work and just like go hiking for weeks at a time and perhaps also fall in love with someone while like sleeping in a tent with beautiful scenery. And then I realized that this is an absolutely horrible idea for me personally. But if anyone who's more outdoorsy than me reads this book and is inspired by to do this, you're welcome, because it's a really beautiful, it's like beautifully written and it's really emotional and I just love it. It's wonderful.
Have you read Wild by Cheryl Strayed?
So I actually haven't.
So I think so you can have the experience of like, okay, elf in his shoes, just walking by yourself like the whole time. Self-discovery. It's great self-discovery, but like ill-fitting shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the whole time I was actually reading this, I was like, maybe I should read Wild finally. Like the last person on earth to actually read it. But yeah, no, it's a great book. And I hope that it inspires more outdoorsly inclined people to go strap on their hiking shoes.
I think it's exciting to be like, oh, you can find your partner on a solo hiking trip.
I know. It's just like such a romantic way to meet someone. It's just so nice. But also I like the idea that I started thinking about it. I was like, but the idea of sleeping alone in a tent in the woods is like deeply terrifying to me. Like even when I hike alone, like even for a few hours, like day hikes, I start to imagine all the things that could go wrong. Like what if I fell and like sprained my ankle or something? And it was like a not very crowded day on the trail and no one came along for hours. I could die. So I don't think I'm cut out for like a weeks long solo backpacking trip.
No, I personally, I'm like more like a solo trip to go for like, go solo European city, go to a solo city where I go free tour in the morning, walking tour, get to meet some people, go have a nice lunch, maybe read in the afternoon. That's kind of like my kind of trip. Like me walking absolutely in the wild and seeing animals and mosquitoes and bugs. No.
Yeah, I think that I don't mind traveling solo, but yeah, like the steady presence of other people I do find reassuring when I'm traveling alone. So if there's some sort of emergency, I don't have to worry about my actual safety.
No. Awesome. What's your third recommendation?
My third one is Hotel. Oh wait, I lied. These are not January, February, March. This is one January and two March books. Anyway, it's Hotel of Secrets by Diana Biller, which is a historical romance. It is set in 1870s Vienna, and I already really wanted to go to Vienna. I've never been before I read this book, and now it is like at the tip top of my list after reading it. The heroine, her family owns and operates this like grand old hotel in Vienna that has like seen better days and is like hit financial hardships or whatever. And the hero is an American like government agent, and so it's a romance. There's also sort of like a hint of intrigue and like spy type shenanigans, and it's like the most charming thing. Like there's so much banter, the supporting characters are delightful, but it also deals sort of very sensitively with like past trauma and stuff, and like she manages to balance like heaviness with light so skillfully. She does this in all of her books. I just loved all of them, and this is like maybe my favorite thing I've read like in the past year. I love it so much. It's so wonderful, and yeah, it's brand new, so everyone should read it.
Oh my gosh, I'm adding that because you have me at Vienna. I'm like,
it like functions like a character in like an extra character in the book. It's so romantic and so sweeping. Like it's so good.
Oh my gosh, so exciting for that one. So tell us where you can find you online.
So you can find me at my website, which is marthawaters.com. And then really the only social media I am active on these days is Instagram, where I'm at Martha B. Waters. And I'm there fairly frequently, probably more often than I should be since I'm on deadline for a book right now.
It is all good. Thank you, Martha, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With Libro.fm, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community.
If you're new to audiobooks, there's a perfect way to squeeze into more reading to your busy life. Listen with a free Libro.fm app while you do your chores, walk your dog, relax at home. The Watch Readings podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get 2 audiobooks on Libro.fm for the price of 1 with your first month of membership. Use code WhatToReadNext. This offer is only valid for new members in Canada and the US. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadingblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.